sure that we've got
something working. We're just making sure that the recorders are working, and Steve has been kind enough to also turn on his phone so that if something happens with my recording, we have a backup, which is great. All right, so we were just discussing the authority of the mayor and administration to act without a council vote. And, you know, I from my own perspective, one of the things I think that was, people will remember issue 31, I was part of a group that supported that. And the city council and Mayor DeGraw was really against that going to a vote by the residents. And I really was at a loss to understand why that was something that president of council, Greta Kearns, and Mayor DeGraw did not want to see voted on by residents. I felt that it was something, even though it didn't pass, that was important enough that the community decide whether it was right or wrong for us. Why was it that, if you know, that was an issue, allowing it to go to a vote of the residents?
The case that was made to me, and part of it was an executive session, so I can't go into great detail, but I think I'm not stepping out of line by discussing what, as I recall, was mentioned in public sessions, that there was some concern of the legal ramifications had it passed, that there would be some sort of financial liability potentially for the city if it were to be on the ballot and to be passed.
And was that because of threats of litigation by the current owners of 1000 Elmwood or 980 Elmwood?
Yeah, I don't have specific knowledge as to whether at that point any threats had been made. It was just presented to us by the city attorney and special counsel that they brought in, mm-hmm. that was a consideration.
My understanding is that the city spent some $85,000 in legal fees fighting or trying to prevent issue 31 from going to a vote by residents. Is that accurate, as you recall?
That's my understanding. Just as a bit of an aside, in August or September of last year, it was brought to council's attention that the legal budget as a whole for the year was potentially going to be 70% over budget, and we were asked to provide some additional funding for that.
70%?
70. Yeah, more than a bit alarming. In my time on council, I don't recall any department having been on target to be that far over budget. So, you know, that was a bit of concern, but equally, at least as concerning, was that we really didn't do anything at that point in time to address what the matter was that was causing the budget to be so far over. We didn't have that $85,000 number provided to us, and I think even at one point it was phrased as, my recollection, the word was infinitesimal as to what the impact on the legal budget was for the battle over keeping something off the ballot from our residents to vote on.
So what was the budget at the time? What had the city budgeted for legal expense last year?
I don't have it in front of me, but it was somewhere in the range of $270,000-ish. So if I could just kind of run through the progression.
Yes,
of where that
yes,
went.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to know what the budget number was.
Sure. So in August or September, it comes to council that we have a problem. I was one of the folks who said, you know, shouldn't we right now start to dive in to try to find out what the issue is? It was decided by council president and others, you know, we're just going to wait until the year is over, even though budget season is coming up, and address it in 2019. Well, the council president formed a special committee to look into it, and as it turned out, we weren't 70% over budget when all was said and done. We were 90% over budget for the year. So the special group meets, special committee meets several times in the beginning of 2019, rather. And long story short, besides, we're still not going to do anything specifically. We're not going to make any adjustments in 2019. And because of the transition in, we knew at that time, mayor, council seats, and some of the other administrative heads, we're going to wait till 2020 to do anything about it. And at that time, we're going to hire a consultant to tell us what to do about it at that time. You know, you don't have to make the perfect fix at any time, but I think it would have made sense at any point along that timeline to step in and go, hey, wait a minute, we need to look at this a little tighter. The good news is, at least most recently, as I've heard from the finance director, we're not looking at a massive overrun for the year, but that doesn't give me any confidence in future years that that might not occur. And if any time there's been in the past 10 years, a good time to look at the way that we, as a city, contract for legal services, that discussion should already be underway, and by now really could have been settled.
So, out of curiosity, what's the budget for 2020 legal services? Or 2019?
2019. I don't have that right in front of me, but it would have been effectively just a bit of inflationary increase over what the budget had been
from the 270, so thereabouts. It might have been like 280 maybe, or somewhere in there.
Let's just, on average, most budget increases were in the range of about 3%, both salary and otherwise. So maybe 300-ish, give or take, but not the 400 and $430,000 ish that we went in 2018.
So you were saying that the information that was conveyed was that it was that the budget for 2017 was going to be about 70% over.
2018.
I'm sorry, 2018.
Yeah.
Was going to be about 20% over.
70%.
I'm sorry.
I know. 70%
over. and then so the 85,000 that was spent for the to fight issue 31 being on the ballot, that really wasn't the only thing that caused the budget to be 70% above what it was supposed to be, was it?
Yeah, that was not, that even just mathematically would not be the total amount. And to understand or to explain the way legal billings work and how we monitor it throughout the year, every month the city attorney provides a detailed invoice to the council president. Council president reviews it and signs off on it, and it's split out by matter, and there's enough detail in it that it can't really be a public document, because oftentimes it's legal matters that are still in progress, and that wouldn't be appropriate.
Relating to maybe employment matters or something like
employment,
that, or all kinds
lawsuits,
of
lawsuits, all sorts of things that you just can't have those published. It wouldn't be feasible, but therefore it's even more important that the city, the council president, understand that they need to keep a pretty close watch on it. For 7+ years when I was council president, ask the finance director, finance department, how many times I asked them, ask the city attorney how many times I asked them about whatever, to make sure we're on track. And more often than not, it's just something that's difficult to understand from the outside looking in. But in the big picture, it comes down to the president of council being the one looking at the invoices.
So one of the questions I got was, why not hire a full-time staff city attorney? Currently, as it stands, as I understand it, the city attorney is on an hourly rate, or there's some kind of contract for compensation based on that. Why not hire, if we're spending $270,000 or in the neighborhood of that per year on legal expense? I was an in-house attorney at one point. I can tell you that kind of money gets a pretty good attorney on a staff basis without having to pay someone an hourly rate or any of that. Why is council looking at that, or if so, why isn't that something that's been pursued?
Well, I understand that a number of years back, actually when I came on council, that was the case. We had an in-house attorney. There are occasions where the in-house attorney would need to hire special counsel, which is currently the case, even with a specific entire firm, if you will, the city attorney's firm, being on contract with us. There are still times that beyond that, just specialty areas that require somebody outside of that firm, certainly outside of one individual, to be at least on board with running through a particular process. A decision was made, and forgive me for not remembering which year it was, but in the range of 2006-ish, that the city attorney at that time was getting close to retirement anyway. It made sense for us to revisit the way we were providing legal services. And we also knew then, even though we didn't know exactly what the yard was going to be, we knew that we were going to have 90 to 100 acres and all sorts of other tactical agreements coming in place. So certainly at that time it made sense to revisit it, and not just in a cursory manner of, when somebody's retiring, bring somebody else in. Pretty clearly now, in my mind, it makes sense to revisit it and revisit it sooner rather than later. We may or may not have avoided that legal overrun in 2018 had we had a different setup. I don't know. As we noted, a good chunk of it was a result of trying to keep something off the ballot from a residence to vote on. Who knows what the House attorney might have done with that. But more importantly, you know, let's look at what we can do. Let's look at what we can change, and that's legal spending in the coming years and the manner in which those legal services are provided. One of the great benefits of having an in-house attorney is there's never a concern about conflict. They're not working with someone else. There's not someone down the hall working with someone else that might be a conflict. And and even not just in the case of the city attorney, but looking in general at some of the matters that we've come across, or I've come across in my time on council, the ethics of my day job apparently are a little bit different than the ethics or the standards for attorneys. That if you're with the same firm, that doesn't automatically preclude you from working on the opposite side, essentially, of a case. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit disturbing, and it's something that we would, at least as a city, be able to avoid if we had in-house counsel.
So it is something, if you were elected mayor, that you would consider doing. You're not saying it something that ultimately would happen, but you at least would be willing to consider it seriously as a way of containing city costs and also making the process a little less cumbersome for the city officials.
Well, understanding the big picture, that there are two departments that report directly to council, the finance director and the city attorney. So the mayor in those two cases can't just decide how either of those positions would be filled, but I certainly would be on board with doing a meaningful analysis sooner rather than later of what our legal services are, what our legal needs are, and the best way to approach them. And that sooner rather than later, going out with an RFP or RFQ under both scenarios of saying, you know, we haven't decided 100% that we're going to stay with the situation we have of the city attorney that's not on staff and works for a firm, or somebody on staff who is 100% committed to the city, but start that process, get that information, start to be able to make some meaningful decisions instead of just kicking the can down the road of, oh, great, we're going to hire yet one more consultant. Somewhere in there, the process maybe will involve hiring somebody to help us out, because that's not our forte, but to just keep pushing it back and really not coming to decisions, I don't think is helping the city.
I've noticed in the city budget that that the consultants can be quite expensive, and there have been times when the city has engaged a consultant and then nothing happens. There's no move to do anything based on what the consultants provided. Do you feel it? We are, as a city, using our resources in the best way by engaging consultants, or is that something that is required to be done?
I think we really need a balanced approach to that, and that's kind of a key concept to so many of my thoughts on things with the city, that being at one extreme or the other usually is not a good idea. In this case, I don't think it's a good idea to say we're never going to use consultants. I also don't think that we just need to make that our knee-jerk reaction to anything that pops up. If for no other reason than we have a tremendous amount of talent right here within our city. Oftentimes residents are experts in those fields and are willing to step up and help out. You know, when it comes to consulting for, I'm trying to think of the best example. Lost my train of thought. What was the original part?
I was talking about consultants, how in the past sometimes we've hired consultants and we haven't, you know, acted on the consultant's recommendations or...
Yeah, I knew there was a point and I sidetracked myself by going in a more general perspective. we actually have hired consultants in the past for studies that get little to no traction, that get little to no use. We contracted with a consultant a few years back to do an overhaul of the zoning code, and the mayor had indicated that he wasn't comfortable with it coming to us yet, and that kind of came up a few times, and then, well, now we're moving towards the comprehensive community plan. It doesn't really make sense for us to look at this piece. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to deferring to this new comprehensive community plan that we're going to do, rather than at least even beginning a discussion on the zoning code, the zoning update, zoning study, however you want to phrase it, that's sitting on a shelf somewhere. I've literally not been able to even see it, so I don't know what it is. It might not be on point to bring it into play right now, but you know, if we paid for it, shouldn't we at least kick it around and decide as a group that that's the case? And that kind of goes to a broader concern about the budget in general, that, to sound like an old fart, to go back to 2004 when I came on council, we were in a substantial financial bind. We had just lost our largest employer. We were already struggling a bit anyway, but we made some tough decisions to go line by line the entire budget to pare out everything that we could. And I'm more than a bit concerned over the last, especially the last several years, that things are getting a bit bloated and sort of hidden, and some money that's in there that doesn't necessarily need to be in there, especially in the case, for example, of discretionary spending, where you don't go forth with any sort of ordinance or resolution and make it known this is how much you're spending in advance or what you plan to spend, and boom, there you go, it's already spent. A couple examples would be the Spaces and Places plan that we still have yet to adopt, despite the fact it was presented or completed in draft in roughly February of this year. I'm told that the original price tag for that study was $60,000. Because of some additional work that the city requested, that doubled. That's not something.
When you say the city requested, would that have been Mayor DeGraw and Director Bowman?
I don't know exactly who the person would have been that allowed that to happen. That would be the most likely case, and I'm assuming that's the case because, as far as I can figure, that's being paid for out of discretionary funds that the administration has. There are some reasons why the mayor or any department in general should have some discretionary funds. Things just pop up. For example, if a furnace goes out in City Hall, we can't have three meetings of council to decide that we're going to spend to fix it. We need to fix it. Unfortunately, what's occurred over the last several years is those discretionary amounts, at least as far as I can tell, have kind of ballooned greater and greater and greater. And at least it's troubling, they're not necessarily just being used for those true emergencies. They're being used for things that, if you hate city government, hate government in general, the use it or lose it concept of money in a budget. If we look at the capital budget for, I'm going to get my years mixed up here, I believe it was capital budget for 2018. The police department had requested an enhanced security camera system for City Hall. That might be a wonderful thing. I don't know. I wanted to have a greater discussion on it just to make sure, particularly knowing that we were well down the road to building a new facility. Did it make sense to put that money
invest
in the new building
it.
Or in the old building? And at least as importantly, is any of that transferable to the new building? Well, I brought that concern up in one meeting, and I found out by the next meeting that had been pulled out of the capital budget and was going to be covered by the discretionary fund. That, to me, is not the way that money is supposed to be spent. It might not make sense for me as somebody who wants to be the incoming mayor to say, maybe we should cut back the discretionary funds for the mayor, because that would make my job much easier, but it's just not appropriate.
How much money are we talking about as far as the discretionary budget? How much is there?
You know, I don't have that number for exactly what it is. Several years ago, I thought it was no more than $50,000. Well, clearly it's more than that now. And that's part of the problem with the budget process that we go through now on council, that for a number of years, especially in the lean years, I don't want to say we went through line by line, but pretty darn close. We looked at it with a fine-tooth comb. And now it just... it doesn't seem that we're quite as concerned about it, and it might not need to be to the extreme that we did way back when, but again, going back to balance, we need to find something in the middle that gives us a comfort level, and our, at least as importantly, our residents, a comfort level that we're spending money wisely and very deliberately. If something needs to be, if money needs to be spent on something, let's talk about it, let's be on board with it, let's make sure it makes sense from each direction and not just someone decide, oh, we got the money, let's do it.
So let's switch topics a little bit.
Can I circle back if I could, just because initially we talked about balanced growth and fiscally responsible approaches to civic facilities. And just real quick, by example, the pool we have now is spectacular. It's wonderful by anybody's assessment. The difficulty with the pool is the conceptual budget for that was $3.8 million. The final price tag for the pool is over $7 million.
Wow.
And throughout that process, I continued to ask if it was over budget, and even from the indication I had, say it looks like it's over budget, and I was told it was not, time and again. Go look at the videos and the record, it's there. But boom, all of a sudden we're at $7 million. And there weren't discussions throughout that process by council as a whole of, you know, it looks like we're going to be over budget, we really want to include this. There was some value engineering done by our parks and a Parks Advisory Board, which is wonderful, but that wasn't at the heart of things. The heart of things was the decision makers weren't circling back, in my mind, to continue to make sure that if we are going to spend $7 million on it, we're cognizant of that, we're understanding what it is, and we're understanding what that means for money we plan to spend elsewhere. So if that wasn't a lesson, one would think it might have been. Now we're almost done with our service center. It is a spectacular building. I've had people who are in the industry say it's the Taj Mahal of buildings. Maybe that's not the greatest idea, especially because in part we started off talking in the range of $2.5 to $3 million for what that project was going to be. And actually we started off with you know, even before that, a concept of retrofitting an old building that in hindsight would just clearly not have served our needs. Unfortunately, throughout the process, we found out that things were edging up and up and up, but not really given an opportunity to address them and maybe make some decisions to save at least part of that. Mm-hmm. The ultimate price tag on that building, coincidentally enough, with land, is over $7 million as well. And some of it's little things that
how do we get from $2.5 or even $3 million to $7 million? What are the things that drive up the budget by $4 million?
Well, there are small parts all along the way. You know, recall that all of a sudden we have a tariff on steel, had planned on that, but that's not everything, and that should have been, in my mind, split out a little more specifically so we understood what that part was. But there are other decisions that we made as well as a city to what that building is today, that, you know, maybe we could have trimmed money off by not having metal above concrete block. If it would have been an all metal building, had it been cheaper? You know, I couldn't get those numbers. The concrete block that is on the lower portion of the building, to not get too deep in the weeds of construction terms or things like that, but there's called face block, split face block. It's textured,
yes,
and interesting,
mm-hmm,
looking, or there's just common block,
right,
which is flat. Either way, you're going to probably paint them, but, you know, that was a question I had throughout several times in the process of, you know, what's the additional cost of us doing it that way? And time and again, I was told, yeah, we'll get it to you, and then push came to shove, or, you know, came down to the end of the road, and we didn't get those numbers. And that might not have been a concern to some others. It wasn't enough of a concern from my colleagues to hold things up or to push as hard as I was trying to push to get it. But we just can't make those mistakes or those decisions, lack of decisions, however you care to phrase them, as we're getting ready to move forward with a project that could easily be as much as those two combined or more.
I mean, I understand. I mean that you know, right now the city is considered financially healthy, and I know that mayoral candidate Kearns has talked about, you know, the AAA bond rating, how under her tutelage this came about, which I believe it probably has to do more with city decisions as a whole versus anything being done by one person. It's my opinion. But I guess it's concerning to me. You're talking about two projects where the overage was $8 million, roughly. And I'm a lawyer, not a mathematician, so let's just call it eight. I mean, that is quite a chunk of change, you know, even to a city that's financially healthy. Grandview is not large, a large community. You know, where, you know, do we take money out of some other programs or something we've allocated to some other project to come up with that money, or do we just pull it out of the bank account?
Well, a couple answers to that, or a couple different perspectives to throw out for food for thought, if you will. In the general spending perspective, I've tried to look at it or put it in terms of someone in a household budget where you're looking forward to building or buying a new house. And you have to make some tough decisions. Do I buy a new big screen TV? Do I buy a new car? Do I go on vacation? Or should I maybe ratchet things back just a little bit with the understanding that we're going to be having this substantial investment? Mm-hmm. And the more we start early making room for that in our budget, the more sense it makes. We really haven't been doing that as a city. And it's ironic or appropriate that in part one of the things we bought was a big screen TV for council chambers. You know, maybe we can move that forward to the new building. If I were a betting man, if I were betting a person, I wouldn't bet you a dollar that it's not, that it would be in the new building. I just don't think mm-hmm. it will. Mm-hmm. But it's just frustrating that back in get my years straight here, in October of 2016, I brought forth legislation, or tried to, that would have, A, moved us forward with a comprehensive facility study to decide what we really needed, and B, would have started to actually put some money aside for a specific source to do that. Unfortunately, neither of those was even allowed on the agenda for discussion.
Why is that?
The council president chose not to. That's who decides what goes on the agenda. The decisions, or the reasons at the time, were in part that should come, those sorts of things should come from the mayor. The legislative body should not bring forth any proposals of that nature. Find a legislative body somewhere, anywhere that doesn't do that. I'm confused. It was mentioned that, you know, this wasn't an appropriate time to bring forth something with such a budget implication. I understand we talk about the budget primarily in November, and we want to get wrapped up in December, so don't you think right before that, in October, would be a good time to start talking about it? And thirdly, which was just thoroughly frustrating, the president criticized the legislation I was trying to bring forward as two separate items, because she and the city attorney had reviewed it when I presented it as one item, as one unified document. And the criticism from council president and the city attorney or concerns were, well, there's this single purpose thing that sometimes folks rely on, and it really should be two separate things. So the only reason it was two separate things, despite the concern brought forth that we can't, well, I saw it as one, why is it two? Was because you asked for it to be two. So those reasons just made me shake my head. Of why we wouldn't move forward with something like that. And at least as importantly, and I want to point out, if you're going to do a comprehensive facilities plan, don't you really want it to be comprehensive? Don't you want it to be looked at before you start making investments? We didn't do that. We as a city had a preconceived notion that we had to move the service center out of the city, that we had to get it moved and underway before we even started about contemplating what else to do with our other service needs. And then we hire a consultant and we tell them all but what their conclusion is to move police, fire, administrative to the now proposed location at Goodale and Grandview. And I will tell you from day one with consultants, I said, you know, please consider looking outside, thinking outside the box. Let's not move forward with preconceived notions. So we end up with, surprise, surprise, a plan that has what we all kind of knew was going to be the conclusion, police, fire, administration at that corner. And unfortunately, not a real answer for what our community center might be. And if you look at what just seems like a huge majority of the folks who took part in the process of, over the months and months and months, that's something they want. Mm-hmm. We have some just rough general ideas. We don't have a price tag for this, what that's going to be. And again, if we spend every penny that we can, and if we go way over budget on police, fire, administration, we're going to miss a golden opportunity to do a community center. And one of the things as well that we're missing a golden opportunity on, and which why I wanted us back in 2016 to hurry up and move forward with our facilities plan, is because the school district was moving forward with, and it's such a cliche, but find a better use for the phrase once in a lifetime, but literally for both groups, for both the school and the city, once in a lifetime opportunity. In neither your life nor mine or anybody who's alive now, we will find a time when either of those groups is going to spend so much money with such a comprehensive overview of their facilities, yet we couldn't come together to talk about a way to collaborate. And I brought that up time and again, and the primary response I heard, primary reason not to do it was, well, you know, it just doesn't make sense to mix school and civic things. It's just from so many angles, safety and functioning and on, it doesn't make sense. And you stop and look at the way we're doing things currently in Grandview Heights with the school district, Buck Park, Pierce Field, Pierce Playground, the tennis courts. We, as a city, use the middle school commons time and again for so many of our gatherings. What part of this am I missing? Why isn't that not a good idea?
Why aren't we collaborating?
And why did we miss
that? Do you feel that that's a function of the current council president and the mayor? That is kind of a, for lack of a better word, a policy decision that's been made, that there shouldn't be that kind of collaboration with other groups within our community?
I'm thoroughly baffled as to a real reason to point to. Mm-hmm. Again, I've brought it up time and again. I've brought it up with the school system, and I don't think they, from what I've heard from them, they've not expressed any great reasons not to do it, other than, you know, we just don't have the money as a school system. The money that we brought forth, for example, in this most recent bond issue, is already spoken for what we're going to do. They have seemed to be, the schools have seemed to be open to carving out maybe at least a part of the campus that will be essentially 4 through 12 once the new building is built. They seem, from my read, to be open to doing something there in terms of community or civic aspect, which would be wonderful. That location is so much better than what we could put down south of Goodale, where people are not real happy about crossing Goodale, and rightly so, because traffic is a bit crazy times, but just centrally located. So hopefully we haven't completely missed the boat, but we just need to move forward sooner rather than later to come up with what that is. And it's just really tough getting the traction to do that. That's one of the goals I would have, being mayor, to certainly have a little more push, a little more say in trying to get that accomplished. And so that, you know, generations from now, somebody's going to say, hey, that made a ton of sense, not, wow, you guys missed a great opportunity again.
Do you think that one of the primary goals of the next mayor, whether it be you or Mrs. Kearns,